Hello and welcome to the Rangers Rundown, the internet's only podcast that still cares about baseball, given that the season is over and no one's talking about it and there's nothing to watch. I am Max, and I'm joined today by Hayden.
Hi, guys.
And Mike.
Hey, guys.
Wow, no baseball, none at all, none whatsoever. What's that like?
It's crazy how the year just kind of ends right as October starts. You can set your clock to it.
I mean, congratulations, Milwaukee Brewers, on winning the World Series of my heart. Cool. Neat.
Yeah.
Wild.
It's kind of fun how they just play 162 games just to see who's the best team, and that's all that there is.
I was amazed at how well that rock, paper, scissors match for the World Series went. Like, I thought it was pretty cool. I've never actually watched one live before. I just decided to watch it this year, and I was like, oh, that's how they do it. Cool.
And the good news for me is I've been able to get caught up on a lot of my TV shows that I'd gotten behind on during baseball season, so I feel like I'm back in touch with the rest of the world.
Yeah, like I read a book the other day. It was wild. It's super weird. I have time again. But yep, no, playoffs are going on. They've been, other than the Cubs losing to the Rockies in the wild card game, I think they've been pretty predictable. Houston's beating the crap out of Cleveland. The Dodgers have taken two from the Braves so far. Milwaukee is clearly outclassing Colorado, and I think it's the team to follow in the National League. And Hayden, what did you have to say in the Discord about the Yankees-Red Sox series?
I don't remember exactly. The fact that we're going to have to root for one of those. David Price. Didn't one of you try to tell me that, no, David Price is actually good and don't worry about it. He's going to. Yeah.
It wasn't me.
man.
Definitely me.
I
he was
woke
really
up,
good at the end of the season, you know, down the stretch for him.
Yeah, well, you know what? The postseason is going on, and if there's
fine.
This is what I said. I said death taxes and David Price meltdown or something like that.
Death taxes, David Price choking in October?
Yes. I think that's what it was. Oh, it's so good. And the reason why I enjoy it so much is because...
You're a hateful man.
I'm a hateful man. Well, because it first came at the benefit of the Rangers in 2010 and 2011, and he was an ace. I would say that more or less he's at least a number one starter still, and the fact that the Rangers, you know, those plucky guys that shouldn't have been there, at least in 2010, were able to take down, you know, the best pitcher on the other team and fight, you know, to break down that door and to continue into the postseason was definitely a badge of pride. But then the more that it went on, and the fact that we faced him in Toronto in that postseason series, and now he's like in the biggest media market in baseball and he's failing, and it's just, he also seems to not be that great of a guy, and it just seems so good that even if he's going right in terms of the regular season and he is being the number one that he true talent is, in October he just can't handle it, and it just makes me feel good. Sorry, I woke up this morning, because I didn't watch the game last night, and I woke up this morning and I was scrolling on Twitter, and I saw somebody like reference an article about how David Price is statistically one of the worst postseason pitchers of all time. I was like, oh wait, did he pitch last night? Did he fail last night? Looked up the box score and he didn't even get out of the second inning. So maybe I'm a hateful man, but I get a lot of joy from that.
Hey, whatever brings a smile to your face.
Yeah. I know I'm not alone. I'm absolutely not alone.
Yeah, you're in the same boat as many, many, many Yankees fans.
And Rangers fans, and I'm sure Red Sox fans too. They don't like him.
Yeah, so you're in the same boat as Yankees and Red Sox fans, generally speaking. yep, that's a good thing to be. I always like.
I'm jumping off that boat.
I agree with large piles of Yankees and Red Sox fans. Definitely the two classiest and most informed and non-bandwagon-y fan bases in all of baseball. Those two, 100%.
And they don't pour beer on opposing fans.
They would never do that. That's a classless act.
Never do that. They would never yell out racial slurs to Adam Jones.
No, you'd never hear that.
Absolutely not.
No. We got to move on before we lose all of our listenership, which is somehow just Yankees fans who are just bored and reveling in a crappy team. I was reminded that the Braves were shut out in both games, and the fewest runs scored in any postseason series in, like, at least modern memory. Either of y'all know who scores the fewest amounts of runs in a postseason series?
The Rangers, twice.
Yep, 96. Both scored one run. 96, yeah. We won that one game. We won that.
That's right,
game,
Burkett.
And then
yep, I forgot
and
about that.
In 99, the Yankees swept us out of the series, and we scored one run in each. So, I mean, the Braves might be able to take that away from us and get swept or get shut out in three straight games, but I am kind of hoping for them. I was sort of hoping that the ticket prices would depress enough that I could trick myself into going out, but I don't think it's going to happen. So, yeah. But that just takes us back to talking about the Texas Rangers, the only team to have scored one run in back-to-back postseason attempts. Good old Texas Rangers. They played some baseball in 2018, and we're here to talk about it. As if the pain of watching all 162 games wasn't enough, we're going to sit here and talk about how it made us feel.
Game by game, we're going to rate 100%. Every game on a scale of 1 to 100.
Yep.
By analyzing each segment of the game from pitching, batting, relief pitching, and also manager decisions. So,
yep. And we'll start opening here.
Opening day.
Oh, yeah, go for it. No, opening day. when Justin Verlander came in and Justin Verlandered all over our faces, that was super fun. Cole Hamels, meh. When's the last time Texas was 500 or better this season?
We never got there.
We did.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, 100% it happened. So when's the last time?
Game two?
So Mike says game two.
I'll say like game eight.
Yep, it was game two, Friday, March 30th.
Okay. We won game two. Cool.
Yeah, Fister beat Dallas Keuchel, the Texas Rangers, went to 1-1 and never made 500 again. Texas was 10 games out by the 13th of May and never got closer again than 10 games out. 20 games out by the 7th of July and never got closer than 20 games.
Wow.
30 games out in September and ended 36 games out. So that's pretty much the only thing you need to know about Texas this season. They never had a winning record, and they were 500 exactly for one day. It was one day.
But don't forget our rally cry. At least we're not Baltimore.
Actually, it was less than a day because the Friday game was a night game and the Saturday game was a day game. So Texas wasn't even 500 for 24 hours.
Whoa. No. It probably went day game to day game on Sunday.
Friday was because they tied.
They were 500 after game two.
Yeah, and that was a night game, and then they lost the.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Never mind.
And they never recovered. So
nice.
There you go. Texas was. I guess I could look it up exactly. It was a 3-hour game on Friday. So that game
the
ended.
Time of game. Yeah.
I'm gonna pull this up. I'm gonna do this to myself. Why I did the wrong button? I'm gonna do the other button. Oh no! I closed the button. Oh well.
Moving
it didn't
on.
Last long. That's the fucking moral of the story here. It was a very, very short experience, and Texas never went back because they thought it was icky. So there you go.
But there was a lot of hope coming out of this season, I think. That's what I'm going to hang my hat on, is the successes we had with some of the young guys and what we're doing in the minor leagues now. I think there's a lot to be proud of for this team and for the future.
I think so.
Yeah, certainly. There were a lot of good steps made and a lot of at least not bad steps made from players. And, I mean, really, the kind of the story is what we anticipated in retrospect, is that the real downfall of the team was the starting pitching. And we didn't – I mean, we kind of just were prepared for that, and that's what happened. And so we lost a lot of games because the pitch – I mean, like the rotation – The Sporkle quiz of name the pitchers that played for the team this year is going to be something else. Like, how many starts did Giovanni Gallardo make? Like
18.
18? How many starts did Matt Moore, Doug Fister, Austin Bibbins-Dirks?
Well, we know those ones.
So many people.
You know, religious listeners to the podcast would remember that was our trivia question last week and that they both had 12.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Drew Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing. That was fun, wasn't it? Y'all remember the Drew Hutchinson experience?
Oof. Yohander Mendez, Ariel Jurado.
Well, at least those are guys who are going to play next year. Like, that might be bad, but they're at least going to play.
Adrian Sampson, Brandon Mann.
Man, Drew Hutchison started 5 games. How did I black that out that hard?
Yeah, that's
because
wild.
His ERA was 9, so I was unconscious. 8.86.
Here's a name for you.
Is it Kevin Jepsen?
Yeah. Kevin Jepsen, when he won a job out of spring training and then immediately like tripped over himself right from the gate.
Which is unprecedented. No player has ever had a good spring in a bad season. You know, it's so weird. I mean, I just assumed he would be an ace.
Shoot. Okay, here's a real trivia question. How many games did Jepsen pitch for the Rangers this year?
It couldn't have even...
20.
21.
Ooh.
Wow.
He pitched in 21 games. I thought that he was off the team in like week 2.
Wow.
That's we started out real bad.
Wow.
You gotta remember that.
Yeah, it was rough.
We were on a pace for like 115 win loss or 115 loss season, like through mid-May.
Wow.
When AJM had to gently remind everybody it's really hard to lose 100 games.
And we just narrowly missed it. Yep.
But the fact that we didn't lose 100, I think that's a moral victory. That's our World Series.
Yeah,
take we only lost 95 times.
Only lost 95 times.
Well, what helped us out?
Like the worst draft pick of any 95 loss team in baseball history. So.
Of course, yeah. Well, what helped us out a lot in terms of the draft pick, of course, and then also, being close to that 100 losses is that we, unlike 2017, we avoided like the 10 game win streak. And then also some other win streaks. Yeah. Yeah, don't worry. we didn't mess around in that realm. Let's see.
At all.
I'm on the baseball reference page. It probably says the longest win streak somewhere clear to see.
There's a 3-game in April.
Let's see. Looks like there's like a 6-game one here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6.
Sunday the 17th of June versus through the 23rd of June.
Yep. 6-game win streak, and then it just gets a lot of red. A lot of red. Which
there
is good.
A 4 in July, a 3 in August, and then... What is annoying is in those last, like, 10 games of the season, Texas went, like, 3-7 and didn't go up in the draft standings at all. It's like, oh, come on. We actually did the right thing this year. We didn't Bogart, and it didn't help.
Well, at least we did that.
Well, while we're talking about where we ended up as far as draft pick is concerned, you guys see that the guy the Braves weren't able to sign last year at number 8
is suing
to become a free agent because he says the Braves didn't offer him enough money for the slot position.
Ooh. So I had not seen that, but I see it now.
Hey, if he wins, maybe the Rangers can pick him up.
That'd be wild. I wonder if there is a mechanism for that. If there's any language for it, or if he's just saying, I want to be a free agent out of a hat.
Well, Boris is his agent, and I'm sure Boris is strongly advising him, so I think there's probably going to be some merit to this.
I think
he switched agents.
Clause. Yeah, where, like, if you are selected, but a team cannot just maintain your draft thing unless they offer a minimum amount or negotiate a minimum amount.
Yeah, I think it's a percentage of... what slot for, you know, what the slot money is for that position.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like 50% of slot value.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. That's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah.
But, definitely, you know, to your point, Mike, there was a lot to talk about. You know, some good things happened for Texas. A bunch of good things happened on the farm. There have been a number of articles put together on that, and we are going to be diving more into how good a year it was on the farm in coming episodes. And we'll probably get into that a little bit today, but we also just wanted to try and focus in on, you know, sort of our awards for things we liked the most this season, be they individual performances from players or stories that stood out over the course of the year. I think we all also have an "oh yeah" moment, which is one of those things that you lose in a 6-month baseball season. We've got a couple of narratives that people may have already forgotten that occurred just this year. And then we're going to look at our hopes and dreams for the future. So, Hayden, do you want to lead us off with your player of the year?
Sure. My player of the year for 2018 is going to be Jurickson Profar.
Carlos Tochi.
It's going to be Carlos Tochi, who managed to somehow not make everybody so mad at him that they killed him and then freed up the roster spot finally.
He brought down that one time, I'm sure. Like, everyone's like, yeah, good job, kid.
Yeah, well, he dressed up like a chicken, you know, at the end of the year. part of that. That was good. So Profar finally got a chance to play every day. We've talked about this before, and obviously if you're watching baseball, then you kind of knew how it went with Elvis and Odor having pretty significant injuries early in the season, and then Beltre also, you know, kind of off and on availability playing third base. So fortunately that fit Profar's skill set quite a bit in order to play, you know, all across the diamond. I think he actually played some first base too a little bit. Mm-hmm. And ended up playing 146 games, got just shy of 600 plate appearances, so certainly a full season, didn't get cheated on that regard. Let's see, which is definitely about double what he recorded in 2016. So he got this, you know, finally got his chance. All reports out of spring training were that he was in a good place mentally and was more mature, not really kind of being demanding or like a prima donna kind of type. That certainly some of the things that he said could be kind of twisted to be that way, or maybe it was completely that way, I don't know. But came here just ready to help the team and ready to play well, and he did that. So he ended up hitting 20 home runs, which is pretty cool. Even still in today's era where everybody hits 20 home runs, he got his 20. He was able to get on base at a 335 clip, which is pretty okay, pretty solid. 204 ISO is great. He did it from both sides of the plate, which is good. Walked 9% of the time. Fangraphs gives him 2.9 wins above replacement, whereas Baseball Reference gives him an even 2. And that combined with the versatility and the smile and all that kind of stuff, it was a really good season for Profar.
Mm-hmm. It was fun. It was encouraging to see the former number one actually get a chance to play, like you were saying, and be fine. I mean, he wasn't setting the world on fire. He didn't, you know, turn into a superstar player overnight, but he was a switch hitter who didn't strike out, took walks, and played the field well. And that was cool. It was fun to see. And hopefully it's something that we, you know, get to see going forward. All right, Mike, that brings you to the plate. Who is your 2018 Texas Rangers Player of the Year?
My Player of the Year would be one Jose Leclerc. This is a guy who's been with the team since 2016, and he's looked promising. He was especially good in very short appearance in 2016. He only played in 12 games with a 1.8 ERA, which is very impressive for a rookie. There was some regression in 2017, got all the way up to 3.94. He was erratic. He had 40 walks in 45 and two-thirds innings, which is never good. And then 2018 comes along, and we thought Matt Busch was going to be a starting pitcher, and we didn't know who our closer was going to be. And then Matt Busch became our closer, and then Matt Busch broke, and Keone Kella became our closer, and then we traded him away, and we said, now what are we going to do about closer? And Jose Leclerc just comes along and has one of the most amazing second-half performances ever. His ERA on the season was 1.56 with an ERA plus of 3.11, which is just phenomenal. He makes players look crazy stupid. I think he's going to have this position locked up for many years to come. I don't think this is a guy that they would trade mid-season next year just because he's got too much value. He's very controllable for the next several years, and he's just going to be a shutdown closer. This is a guy that you could see becoming a Mariano Rivera-type player that's going to, you know, pitch his entire career as a closer for one team. Unless he breaks, you know, there's always that opportunity. But it was one of the real good feel good stories of the year for me, is to see him emerge and really shine under the spotlight.
Oh, absolutely. Leclerc is somebody I looked long and hard at as my player of the year. He was just absolute nails. I was talking about it before, but in terms of guys who pitched at least 30 innings, he was the fourth best by ERA plus this season, behind only Blake Treinen, Oliver Perez, and, you know, some other guy who I've already forgotten. But Jose Leclerc, absolutely incredible season. Gave up one home run in the season, which is pretty fun. I mean, Rangers had a closer who wasn't giving up gopher balls all the time. And in proper Rangers fashion, can either of you name the one player to hit a home run off of Jose Leclerc?
Chris Davis.
Chris Davis.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. It's a two-run home run. It was one of his few blown saves. Happened back in July. Davis hit a two-run homer in the top of the ninth inning in a game that Texas lost 6-5. So Jose Leclerc's only home run was to the guy who was built in a lab to hit home runs off the Texas Rangers pitchers. That's okay. We're gonna pass zero home runs, negative one home runs on the season allowed.
He also had a very healthy 13.3 strikeouts per nine, which is pretty phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, Leclerc was really, really good. Just a really phenomenal. Oh, yeah, I just remembered who the other player was who was better than Jose Leclerc by ERA plus. It was by like 6 points, and it was Jeremy Jeffress. So now I can get mad again. Boo. So for me, my player of the year, I'm going to stick with the pitching, and I'm going to go ahead and go with Mike Minor, who might not be a particularly sexy pick for a player of the year, but I think was very encouraging in his first season starting in 5 years. So Minor ended up with a 4.18 ERA across 157 innings. He was the only Rangers pitcher with more than 25 starts. That's a cutoff because Bartolo Colon had 24. But Minor did start in 28 games, so he's the only guy who looked like a full-season starter for Texas once Cole Hamels was traded. He was stronger in the second half with a sub-4 ERA, or I think it was a sub-3 ERA, right? It was a high 2.9. But
yeah,
really good season from Mike Minor. Went out there and looked like a guy who is a starter. You know, he's not an ace starter, but he was a better-than-average starter and a guy who, in his first time being given the ball every 5 days, went out there and gave us almost 160 innings across 28 starts. That's encouraging. Texas went 14-14 in his 28 games. I think his actual record was 12-8. And, pitcher wins, losses aren't a big deal. But the fact that this Texas Rangers team that finished like 400 games below 500, is that right?
Give or take? Pretty close.
Yep. Texas might as well have just not played baseball at all this season. To go 50-50 and Mike Minor starts is pretty cool. So,
yeah, he's someone that we're going to be able to rely on for the next 2 years and possibly beyond. Who knows? But we've got one starting pitcher for 2019, guys. That's exciting.
Yeah. And
one down, four to go.
A model for other Ranger conversion projects, which we may get into later on today.
Do you have any honorable mentions? I have one for player of the year. I would say Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The first Rangers backup catcher to bat above the Mendoza line since the Ford administration, I believe. I get so sick of seeing those guys with their 143 batting averages or 178. It's just sad. And I think he's got, his super utility position locked down for many years to come. He was fun to watch. He's got a great passion for the game. He's got a great feel for the game. He just has good baseball instincts. And while he's never going to be a team MVP, he's someone that we can rely upon. And that's one less position you have to worry about in a few coming years.
Absolutely. Hayden, do you have an honorable mention?
I didn't prepare one, but that does remind me of maybe not the player as a whole, but I would like to bring attention to Ronald Guzman hitting home runs.
Yes, absolutely.
Just in general.
Yes.
Because
as many home runs this season in the bigs as he ever hit in a season in the minors.
Right, so that's super cool. The big knock on him in his game is that, he's a good fielder. He's a quality fielder, and he can hit just fine, but he's not going to hit enough home runs to be a first baseman, and like that's his position, so that's a problem. And he did totally fine. I mean, if you take away the concerns in the minors about his power, and if you just look at this guy being a rookie in the big leagues and say, oh yeah, he can handle it. So I think that is a big win as far as just a singular skill that was good to see play out in the major leagues this year.
And he played in 123 games, roughly 80% of a season. So if he had played in, let's say, about 155 games, which is more or less a full season load, he was on pace for 20 home runs. That's not big time power at first base, but that is not unplayable power at first. You know, he's a guy we talked about very early in the season that, and I will say this again, I am in no way comparing Ronald Guzman to Aaron Judge. But Judge is a guy who hit more home runs in the majors than he ever hit in any season in the minor leagues. There are always big questions about his ability to actually tap into his raw power. Everyone looks at Aaron Judge and they're like, yeah, that dude can hit a ball 1,000 feet. That's not a problem. But can he do it in games? And then, you know, he did in terms of into a superstar. And Guzman's question, like you were just saying, is always, can he hit for power in games? And he just proved at the major league level that, yes, he in fact can. Not for a ton. He's never going to pop 40 home runs in a season. But he's a guy who hit 16 home runs this year, and I think you can peg for somewhere around, you know, 18 to 22 home runs if he's a full-time first baseman next season. And that's certainly playable power. The defense he gives you is good. He's a fun guy to have on the field. And that leads naturally into my honorable mention for the season, which is Joey Gallo, who I think got lost a little bit. But he put up another 40 home run season. You know, his the batting average and is never going to be very sexy. He's going to have one year at some point where he just has some batted ball luck and has that season where he bats, you know, 250 and on bases 400 and hits 60 home runs or whatever. I keep hoping it. It will occur. We've got lots of time to figure that out. He's still very young. He did hit 40 home runs. He looked really good as a right fielder. He played the, you know, pretty much the entire season. You know, 148 games started for Mr. Joey this season. So the fact that he did not backslide, the fact that his 40 homer season last year wasn't a one-off, he's proved that he can do this at the major league level. That's very fun, and I super enjoy rooting for him every day. So definitely an honorable mention for me for player of the year.
Cool. And you know, there's actually one more. That would be one Rougned Odor. He turned a corner this year. At the beginning of the year, it's just a repeat of last year, swinging from his shoe tops. He wasn't making good contact. It was well below 200 on the batting average, but he started listening to one Shin-Soo Chu, and things turned around for him. At one point in the season, I think he got his batting average up to about 275, which is amazing compared to where he was last year. He did slump a little bit to the end of the season and ended with a 257 batting average, a 763 ops, which is still huge compared to what he had done previously. So I think he's actually saved his neck with the organization.
Mm-hmm. I'm just pulling up here. It looks like his batting average peaked at 279.
Ooh.
In August.
Nice.
Almost. He just scratched as a 280 hitter, which if Rougned Odor can go back to being a guy who actually makes relatively consistent contact, very fun. So I think that leads then into our sort of stories of the year. We were talking about this before. A story can be something that occurred over the entire course of the season. It could be a narrative that got carried through on the Rangers side as an organization or for a player, or it might be as simple as just a single game. So Hayden, did you want to lead us off there?
Sure. So my answer for this is going to be the same as the first one, Jurickson Profar, but not the simply just the fact that he was able to, you know, hit 20 home runs and not strike out a lot and stuff, but just the fact that he was able to play and able to be the number one prospect in baseball. So he came up in 2012 and his shoulder completely died, and apparently his kind of his demeanor and his place in the organization was not good, and all this kind of stuff that just really got in the way on and off the field about him. You know, the Rangers finally get the number one prospect, and we don't even get to play with him. You know, the fact that we were able to get the real Jurickson Profar every day is a simple and short story. But I'm just really glad that he was able to play. I think that it's easy to take that for granted, but let's go back all the way, you know, to 2012, and we can see that we cannot take this for granted. And so the fact that, again, like you said, he wasn't a superstar. He didn't turn into Jose Ramirez overnight, but he had a quality season, and I'm glad that we were able to at least get this. You know, he was good. He had a good year, and I'm glad for him, and I'm glad for the organization. I'm glad for the fans, and that would be my main takeaway, is like the first full year of Profar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned it during his your statistical breakdown out of him, that he got to play all over the diamond as well. And I think that is an important thing. You know, something that we were sold on as Rangers fans, you know, 5-6 years ago when he was coming up as a top prospect. You know, he was a shortstop, but that he was one of those really advanced baseball minds. He's a guy who could really play all over the field. He ended up being sort of forced to do it due to roster construction issues, and he bounced around a lot, and he wasn't very good. He never got comfortable playing left or playing second or playing, you know, wherever he was asked to play. And I think that was addressed a lot this season. You know, his shortstop play to begin the season was not very good. You know, his arm actions from short were a little questionable. The strength of the arm appears to be there, but he was very wild from short, and so I know a lot of people were pretty down on his defense. But he played, you know, he was getting to balls at least at short, and I've seen worse shortstops play at the major league level. And his play at third base is pretty good. He played well at second. He played a bunch at first. He even played one game in left field this season. And that didn't stop him from posting, you know, I think his best, even if you adjusted out his best batting season in his career, and clearly his best, you know, full season, because it was his only full season. So that was fun. You know, if Profar and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa are guys you have on a team who can give you a little bit of positional flexibility, a little bit more comfort in fielding unusual lineups or doing something interesting with the guys you have available to you, that's very cool. And that's something that I hope we get to see going forward. I love the fact that he's a switch hitter and that he, you know, fixed it, and his right-handed stroke was very good this season. Definitely a big story. Mike, you want to take us into your story of the season?
I will. For me, the story of the season, which had its highs and lows, was Adrian Beltre. Adrian, for years and years, we thought this guy had found the fountain of youth and was drinking heavily from it because he never seemed to age. This year, it finally caught up to him. He definitely lost a step. He lost a little bit of the bat speed, but he's not hitting any home runs from one knee anymore. But there's still a lot to enjoy. He climbed up the career hits list. I believe he ended the year last year somewhere in the low 20s. Got all the way up to 16 on the list, right behind Cal Ripken. He's cemented himself as a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think I remember seeing someone on Twitter say that if one of these idiot baseball writers decides to leave him off his ballot just for posterity's sake, then he should immediately lose his ability to vote, which I agree with. He's been someone who's provided so much joy and entertainment over the years. Just the little things that he does that make us laugh. I love the fact that his final play in the field was catching a grounder at third with men on first at second. So the guy at second is obviously not going to make it, and the guy just kind of stops, and Beltre decides he's not going to chase, and so he just holds the ball and motions for the guy to come to him. And I thought that was a really entertaining way for him to end the season. The guy came up and laughed and took his lumps. So if this is Beltre's last season, I salute you, sir. You've been my hero. You're my number one favorite Ranger of all time, which I thought could never happen. Having come of age in the 90s with Pudge and Nolan and Juan Gonzalez, but it was truly an honor to be able to have him on our team for these last 8 seasons.
Yeah, I never thought anybody would ever challenge my sort of Rangers pantheon of favorite players, and getting to sort of know Adrian the last couple of years and this last season, hell of a thing. You know, even if he does come back next year, that's not going to replace what it was like watching this season and thinking we were letting him go, and the fact that he was able to come back and produce pretty well and get himself a little closer to some of those benchmarks and move up those leaderboards, that was a lot of fun to watch, even in a mostly complete garbage season that was over by game 3. At least he gave us a reason to watch pretty much every day.
And he gave you 4 BIs in his first 2 at-bats.
Yeah.
When you actually went to see him live.
Yep. My wife's first ever Rangers game and my first game at the Temple in an incredibly long time. And Adrian Beltre, I clearly knew that the rundown was in attendance. as a listener of the Rangers rundown, thank you, Adrian. We know that you're tuning in and giving us those downloads. So we appreciate your service to Texas. So I guess I'm going to go to a slightly different direction for my story of the year. I had to choose my runner-up story. I'm going to go ahead and get out of the way right now, and that was Ronald Guzman hitting 3 home runs in front of his family at Yankee Stadium. That was super fun to watch.
Super
cool.
They
were going absolutely nuts up in the stands. It was, you know, I will always root against the Yankees vociferously. And when it's Texas getting their chance to put some lumps in, that's just a double victory for me. But I thought the story of the year occurred back in June on Father's Day when Jose Trevino had the walk-off hit for Texas. And it was clearly a pretty emotional thing for Jose, and it was fun for Texas winning. And Father's Day is always sort of a classic baseball fan kind of day. You want to see your team do well on that one. I mean, my dad is who introduced me to baseball, and there was a great story written by The Athletic. I think it was Yusuf, Saad Yusuf wrote that story on Jose Trevino and his Father's Day experience and what it meant, because Jose's father had passed away just a few years prior, and so that was who got Jose into game was his father Joe, and Jose had just become a father himself, and so this was his first Father's Day as a dad, and his relationship with his dad was so meaningful. And they talk in this article that the last game that Jose and his father attended was July 23rd, 2011. It was a Blue Jays at Rangers game, and Michael Young walked it off in the bottom of the ninth with a single to right field to score. Kitten face Craig Gentry. That was the last game they attended together. So just almost 7 years before the Father's Day walk-off for Jose Trevino. And I thought it was just it's one of those really interesting life stories that baseball gets to give us, because there are so many events, there's so many things, there's so many players, there's so many guys who've overcome so much to get to where they are in Major League Baseball, who are realizing their dreams, who are getting a chance to go out there and do the thing they've worked for every day since they were 5 or 6 years old. That's really fun. And so I think it's always cool to be reminded of those human stories, and sometimes they are storybook, and that's what we got on Father's Day with Jose Trevino. He's a guy that I hope to see again playing for Texas next year. He may only ever really be a backup catcher, but he's one I'm always going to root for. And it was just a really cool experience. I happened to watch that game live, and it was really exciting. Even in June, rooting for a bad team, you can always pretend that maybe people will figure it out, and maybe you're watching the future. So that was one that stuck out the most for me this season.
Definitely.
You know, there was also the storyline about Jose's coach back in Corpus. I think it was, maybe it was Newberg that wrote this story, that when Jose was in high school, he was playing baseball, but, you know, he had other things on his mind, probably chasing girls and stuff like that. But his coach shows up one morning and asks him to go jogging with him. And he basically gave him the lecture of, if this is what you really want to do, you got to put 100% into it. And they ended up jogging together every day for God knows how long. And that coach, forget how many years he coached, seemed like it was close to 40 years maybe. And Jose was the very first player that he ever coached to actually make it to the majors. And so after Jose got sent back down, he went and drove to the coach's house and gave him that baseball from his very first hit. And I thought that was a pretty cool little nod to the coach. Another feel good part of the story.
Yeah, that's amazing.
He's a guy I really want to root for. He seems like a very easy player to get behind. You know, everyone says really great things about Trevino as a game manager and as a sort of leader of men and as a guy who works with his pitchers. So it doesn't bug me very much that the bat might not be there. He's a guy I want to see playing for Texas going forward. So to try and clear the air a little bit, we're going to stop talking about the great stories of this year and talk about the weird stories of this year. The stories we may have forgotten, the players we may have let slip away, the incidents that will be difficult to remember on those Sporkle quizzes going forward. So we wanted to talk about our
oh yeah
moments of the 2018. Like, oh yeah, you remember that time that guy did a thing?
So yeah. One of the, I mean, I find just a particular amount of joy in the length of the baseball season.
Sure.
That's kind of up for debate, you know, currently, and maybe they'll shorten the year. But the fact that it's six months long, day in and day out, there are so many like nooks and crannies for roster moves and stories to hide, to where you completely forget about them, and they can seem even large in the like at present, but then you know once you reach October and into the next spring, you've completely forgotten about it. And I just think that it's so unique and special to baseball that it can even kind of be its own. It's literally its own story. Kind of, it's a book with many chapters and pages, and just like any kind of good book, you know, you don't memorize the book. Because, or you know, like, what's on page 93? I don't know. What happened in game 93? I don't know. Let's go look at it. Oh, yeah, this was great. So, but my story, my kind of forgotten narrative that I definitely forgot about myself, was that Tin Lincecum was a Rangers employee. And I actually just looked this up again so I could kind of refresh kind of the dates and the timing and stuff. So he was actually released at the beginning of June. So it's not like even something that, you know, we started and stopped in March or something. Like, it was into the summer, and nothing came of that. So we gave him $1 million, and he had a blister coming out of spring training. And so we said, all right, Tim, you know, go ahead and take care of your blister and make sure that that heals up properly and you give it all the time that it needs. And then he went to Round Rock and pitched for 30 days and he wasn't very good. And then we said, all right, well, see you later, which is just kind of bizarre, just kind of a bizarre circumstance that we in two levels, like we had him on our mind and like on our radar kind of heavily for from March to June, yet at the same time he never even actually pitched for us. So, and it was because of a blister, and then it was because he wasn't actually good anymore, even though Driveline or whoever he was working with kind of proved that maybe that wasn't the case. It's just a really weird thing that, like, oh yeah, remember that time that the two-time Cy Young winner just kind of flamed out in Round Rock?
Oh, and remember the story of his brother dying right before the start of spring training? That was crazy.
That made things easier. Yeah, just kind of just weird. Just weird. It's going to get lost to the sands of time, I'm sure.
How do you think Tim Lincecum got cut? Like text, email, Snapchat? Like,
I bet Instagram you he called post? It quits.
I saw it here in this ESPN article I just pulled up. It's just that John Daniels talked to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See? I've already forgotten the details.
All right, Mike, what's your story from the 2018 season?
Mine is an interesting one. I want to add to Hayden's narrative the length of the baseball season, because for those of you who have watched Ken Burns' baseball documentary, which is pure gold, if you haven't seen it, you definitely need to. There's a great quote from a historian from Boston, a woman, and she says something to the effect of, you know, there's baseball being played virtually every day, you know, except for the day before and after the All-Star break for a solid 6 months. And she said, it's not that you need to watch every inning of every game, but it's there if you need it. And I just love the way she put that, because it is. And you know, I watch part or all of every game this year, just about every game, I would say. I would say I've watched fewer innings than in seasons past. You know, those West Coast games, there's no way I was staying up to the end of those. You know, it was 10 o'clock, 10:30, and it was lights out, what regardless of the score. But definitely amused me. But there was one particular occasion that for me, it's sentimental reasons, it was probably my favorite game of the season. It was April 15th, so it was early in the season. I'd gone to Houston for my best friend's father's funeral. He had passed away. And so the day of the game during the afternoon was the viewing at the funeral home. And then after that, the family, we went out for dinner, and I've known Scott since high school, so I'm considered part of the family. So I was invited to go along. And so we went to this old school Mexican restaurant, and they positioned Scott and me so that we could see the TV at the bar, because there's a Ranger game being played and the Rangers were playing the Astros, which made it even more interesting. But what made it even more interesting than that was that it was the coveted showdown between Cy Young winners, Bartolo Colon and Justin Verlander. And Colon pitched his best game of the season by far. He was virtually unhittable. He actually threw 7 perfect innings. In the top of the 8th, he gave up a walk, and so then he got an out. So he went 7 1/3, no hit, and then he gave up a hit and was pulled shortly thereafter. And it was a real close game. It was 1-0 for the majority of the game. Chirinos hit a home run in the 2nd, I believe. And so by the time that he's lost the no-hit bid, we had wrapped up dinner and we were leaving, and so Scott and I decided to go to a sports bar down the street to watch the remainder of the game. And we got in there, and the place was completely packed, not just because Astros Rangers, but also because the Rockets were playing a playoff game that night. So it was standing room only, and it was all Houston fans. And basically the Rockets game ended first, so a few people cleared out, and that allowed us to actually take a seat at the bar. And Kella came in the ninth. They tied it up, then Kella came in the ninth, got him through the ninth, went to extra innings, and then Chirinos hit a 2-run double in the top of the 10th, I believe. And I believe Deepman closed out the game, and Scott and I were just screaming at the top of our lungs, just high-fiving and getting just dirty looks from every other person in the bar. It was really, really funny. But for the eve of his dad's funeral, I thought that was a great moment for me and him to get to witness something like that. And that's what sold me as a Bartolo Colon fan. That guy is, he's just a good guy. He makes you laugh. Love the charcoal commercial he did with DDJ at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's that's gonna be hard to top. So that happened this season in a complete change of gears. Something I already got referenced once today, and that was y'all remember that time when Texas had a significant closer controversy in the offseason because Matt Bush got turned into a starter? Matt Bush. Yeah, well, he's not able to close games. So I mean, you can't trust Keone Kella because he's got all the injury stuff. And I mean, Alex Claudio, I guess, is your best bet because he's clearly the best Rangers reliever. But, you know, is he really a closer?
Spring training. It's a time of naivety and all sorts of stuff.
It was something. Of course, Keone Kella ended up getting the opportunity to close early on. It's a bit of a committee thing. Deakman got a save early. You know, he got one in April, and Alex, I think Claudio had a chance to come in and get a save in April as well. But it ended up being Keone Kella by the middle of April, and he was the only guy who picked up a save for Texas until Deakman did it in June, because Kella had been used the 2 nights before that, and then Jesse Chavez picked up a save and then got traded a little bit later. Then that Jose Leclerc guy, I guess he showed up and did Jose Leclerc things all over the place. And so Texas will presumably go into next season with not even a hint of a closer controversy. But it's crazy how quickly things can change in the baseball world, that you can go from hand-wringing about Matt Bush being a starter and that depriving Texas of potentially its best closing option to, well, duh, it's going to be Jose Leclerc, like arguably the best relief pitcher in all of baseball. Like, why would you have anybody else? You know, he's phenomenal. So Texas things, it doesn't take long, especially in the world of pitching, for things to change. That's all we can hope for as Texas Rangers fans going forward, is that the pitching situation sorts itself out, and that Texas will land on a couple of guys who maybe find their way into being stars at the big league level, or a couple of guys improve their games, and that's how you get back into contention. Work for Cleveland, dang it.
And it's going to work for us. Yes.
Yeah, 100%. Texas is going to get this.
Let me butt in right there and also add in my guarantee of a World Series within the next decade. That's all.
Nice.
And if that doesn't cash in, everyone, just remember to hit up Hayden.
So find me in 2028, wherever I'm at.
Yep.
And I'll pay up. Sure.
Yeah, just good. Dick kickings. You can just kick Hayden in the dick until you get over the fact that Texas hasn't won a World Series in the last decade. Does that sound fair to everybody?
Sounds fair to me.
Absolutely.
100%.
you know, on that pitching front, we got we had some good things happen in the minors. We, you know, JD said he was going to restock the farm, and he did, and it's amazing just how he was able to do it. Basically, we traded Brett Nicklaus, Jesse Chavez, Cole Hamels, Jake Diekman, and Keone Kella, and in return, we got 8 pitchers and 2 position players, and there's pretty exciting names in there. We've gone over them in the past, but what's particularly heartening for me is the fact that we ended up with 4 guys in Frisco who are all looking like they're ready to make the leap. You got Joe Palumbo, you got Taylor Hearn, you got Edgar Arredondo, and Jonathan Hernandez, and you know, none of them are projecting to be an ace, but I think you've got some solid guys there, and there's going to be some good competition, and I see if we could get 2 of those guys to make it to the major league roster at some point in 2019, I think that's a major victory.
Absolutely. I mean, Taylor Hearn looks really exciting. There's a couple of other names, like, you know, Riley Lacy could turn into something interesting. Joshua Javier came over from the Diamondbacks in the Diekman trade alongside of Wei-Jae Wong, who looks like he could be a figure for Arlington, or in Arlington next season. Sherton Apostle was one of those position players. He's fun. I think, though, that the trade that may go generally forgotten is that Brett Nicklaus just traded on April 6th. Nicklaus is a guy who I liked quite a lot. He looked like he had a decent bat. He had a good year in AAA for San Diego, but there are serious questions of his abilities as a catcher and whether or not his bat would ever actually work in the majors. And Nicklaus was traded on the 6th of April, so this is technically a regular season trade. And the Padres sent Emmanuel Clase back, who had a very, very good season for Spokane. Not a crazy strikeout season, but he basically just didn't allow people to score. Apparently the stuff is legit. He's not a crap tosser up there. He's not sitting 83. He throws hard. He gets good results. That's a unique combination, it feels like, for Rangers pitchers over the last couple of years. Usually either have good stuff or good results, never both. But now we have some legitimately interesting players who we can actually be watching the next couple of seasons, between Taylor Hearn and Hans Kraus and John Hernandez and all these other names. So that's a cool position to be in. And I think that leads as a nice natural segue into our hopes and dreams segment, which is what are we looking for the Rangers to do this offseason that doesn't involve trading for Mike Trout? It can involve trading for Mike Trout.
I guess so.
But it's going to be literally Mike Trout, and then nobody you've ever heard of is the rest of the Rangers roster.
We'll just feel the one man roster, and
Mike Trout and like 8 indie ball players.
Yeah,
it's literally the only way that the Mike Trout's team situation could be worse than playing for the Angels is if he gets traded to Texas.
It's not going to be 8 indie players. It's going to be 7 indie players and Carlos Tochi.
I said 8 indie players.
Got him.
I stand corrected.
Got him.
Got him.
Okay, so hopes and dreams, which
what's
sounds
your plan for the offseason?
Yeah, which sounds positive. I'm gonna go kind of negative.
That's a very good Texas Rangers fan hope.
Right. Well, I'm gonna say my hope and dream is rooted in pessimism. Okay, so Nomar Mazara. Okay. I love this guy. Like, well, that's kind of a strong word. He's kind of disappointing me overall.
He's near Jeffrey Springs.
Right. I'm mostly a believer in Mazara, and I'm a fan of his, and I think that he has a lot of really good skills. I think that a lot of people would agree with that. He still, of course, is very young, but he's going to be 24 before the end of April next year, so he's kind of like shedding that uber young kind of moniker, and it's just time for him to be a good player, right? He's hit exactly 20 home runs each of the last 3 seasons, which is, I think, is actually kind of fun. But he's still
Chris
just kind of
Davisian levels.
Exactly, yeah. And he's just hovering around that 750 OPS mark. So this year he actually increased his OPS from last year. It's up to 753, which is, I mean, just kind of average, and he has the tools to not be average. He has mega power in game. I don't know what the actual scale would be on a 20 to 80 scale, but I mean, we've all seen him hit, you know, 440 foot home runs with kind of ease. It looks like he's just got that real natural power. He just doesn't hit the ball in the air. And so my offseason hope and dreams is that Mazzara goes from just being a guy that we drafted, and yeah, I mean, like, he was a major league player and he was okay, and he wasn't like a dead weight or anything, but he wasn't very good. And he just kind of all, I don't want him to turn into a slightly better Martin Perez, where it's like, yeah, you know, like, he's not bad, but he's not really kind of a winning piece. You know, he's easily replaceable. I don't want Mazzara to do that. So really, it's not now or never for Mazzara in 2019, because he still will just only be 24 years old. But, man, it would be really good if we could get the last 3 years of his team control just to be excellent years of two to four win seasons. Maybe four is a lot, because he has only been one. You know, mostly in his career, but at least just be firmly above average and firmly hard to replace. That's what I need. That's my hope and dream.
That's a hope and dream.
Yeah,
that's a good one. I mean, that's one that is going to be very important to seeing if Texas can turn it around and actually
exactly.
be a competitive team in the future. If Nomar Mazzara is not an above average player, not simply just a player who is fine. If he right. isn't an above average player, the core doesn't look strong. All right, Mike, yeah. What about you? What's your offseason hope, plan, outcome, whatever it is?
I think 2019 is going to be a whole lot like 2018. I think that we're going to have some spare parts in our pitching rotation, and we're going to have to hope on them a whole lot. Probably some reclamation projects, guys coming off of surgery. I guess a hope there would be that you would find one diamond in the rough, a Mike Minor, if you will, someone who can get himself back on track and actually be, you know, a good serviceable option for the next 2 to 3 years. I think that's about the best we can hope for on the pitching side, at least at the major league level. My biggest hope is that the guys in the minors continue to develop, you know, as far as those pitchers that I named, the four that are in Frisco, that, you know, a couple of them are going to be knocking on the door and going to break through to the major league side. I think that would be a huge win. If we had just one next year that came up and was actually good, you know, gets that actually good award from us, I think that would be a win for the organization. But, you know, we've got a ton of guys with a ton of talent at the lower levels, and I just want to see them all just take it up to the next notch, just stocking the farm, getting them ready, moving them up, and not just on the pitching side, but on the position side as well. You know, it's funny, you know, I think that in 2 to 3 years, you know, Mazzara, I hope the best for him. I hope that he can figure it out and become, you know, an elite player. I don't have a lot of confidence at this point that that's going to happen, just because, I mean, I was spoiled back in the 90s by guys like Juan and Pudge, who came up and just were lights out at 19 years old, mm-hmm. and they had it figured out from the very beginning, and it's kind of crazy. I know guys develop at different rates. You know, there's always going to be the Nelson Cruz outlier, but I tend to think that in 2 to 3 years, you know, these worries about where we're going to get playing time for Calhoun, and is Mazzara going to turn the corner, and can DDJ, can he figure it out at the plate? I think they're going to be distant memories, because I think you're going to have guys like Bubba Thompson and Leody Taveras and Julio Pablo Martinez, guys like that that are going to be knocking at the door. I'm sorry?
I said, woohoo. Like, that's exciting. Like, it's, you know, sorry to kind of cut you off, but yeah, like, these kinds of stories kind of are boring. We're kind of tired of this, and it's way more exciting to be like, hey, shoot, we got Bubba Thompson coming. Okay, let's talk about that. Now I'm invigorated.
Yeah, and I mean, these are going to be guys that are going to be coming up when the Rangers are actually in contention again, yeah. And I just think that, you know, Willie, he should be less concerned about the fact that he wasn't brought up from the very beginning of the season. He pouts like a baby. I think he should be more concerned with the guys that are breathing down his neck, because I think that he could be the next Michael Choice.
Oh, man.
I mean, Even something as straightforward as MLB.com's top 30 Rangers, numbers 3 through 8 for Texas are all pitchers. So that's 6 of the top 10, 6 of the top 8. Cole Wynn, Hans Kraus, John Hernandez, Taylor Hearn, Joe Palumbo, and Cole Reagans, who I think a lot of Rangers fans may have allowed themselves to forget this year, given that they had Tommy John in spring training. But Reagans is a guy who potentially could be pretty interesting for Texas going forward. But then behind them, you know, unlike most seasons where you at least have a couple of Rangers pitchers that are maybe interesting, you know, potentially more interesting names are behind them. Owen White was one of their top draft selections this last season. He's apparently very impressive. Tyler Phillips, Jason Barr was one of those trade acquisitions. CD Pelham and Yohan Mendez played with Texas this year and both showed, you know, why they might actually be big league players at times. AJ Alexi had a very, very good season. Mason Englert is a really interesting high school draft pick. Again, like Owens and Owen White and Cole Wynn did not pitch, but will be pitching in Instructs and has had some pretty good showings there. Kyle Cody is going to be back next season. Alex Spies is going to be back next season. Jeff Springs may be a starter next year. Maybe the next guy who would just say, hey, just do what Mike Minor just did. Follow that thing. Maybe Jeff Springs is a guy who puts, you know, up 150 Borpish innings next year. That's a very valuable piece for Texas to have. So, and that doesn't even get into the 29th guy on MLB.com's top 30, Yeri Rodriguez, who had a fascinating season between the rookie and Spokane teams, and is somebody who figures to be playing full season ball next year, and it's going to be a must follow for me early on. So, pitching, it's in the future. We just hope that these guys all get through their off seasons healthy, and they make their rehabs, and we can come into spring training and actually have some fun.
And I want to jump in and just say, you know, beyond the stars, there's just a lot of good names out there. And there's if you want to have hope for the future, in addition to the ones that we all just rattled off, I can go machine gun fire at you. Curtis Terrio's MVP of the PCL. He hit more home runs. He had 15 home runs. It's most hit there since 2007. Don't know how to say it. Deosbel Arias had a .366 batting average with a .942 OPS. Sherton Apostle, you mentioned Yuri Rodriguez, Hans Kraus, you mentioned Bubba Thompson, Tyreek Reed, Sam Huff, DeMarcus Evans, Anderson Tejeda, Leody Taveras, C.D. Pelham, Jonathan Hernandez, Joe Palumbo, Edgar Arredondo, Hunter Cole. I mean, the list goes on and on. We've got a lot of reason to be excited
Jonathan
here.
Jonathan Ornelas, he was another draft pick who had a really, really good debut. Ornelas played really, really well for the rookie team. 302, 389, 459. Only hit 3 home runs, but he had to steal some bases. He had 15 steals. People really, really liked his play. So you know, there's some exciting young players out there. They give us some real guys to actually watch and to box score scout next season. More conversations to have with Kevin. So lots of fun guys out there, and that's something I'm really looking forward to in 2019.
And you want to know what I think may have been the biggest win of this Ranger season?
Go for it.
Rangers Rundown.
Oh.
Well, on that high note, I'm going to take us into my off-season plan, which is going to depress us real quick because I have a dream and a nightmare, I guess, and that I think my hope is for the Texas Rangers to move on from Shin-Soo Chu this offseason. I like Chu. He's been a guy I rooted for as a Ranger, but he's a dude that Texas absolutely needs to get away from to open up plate appearances to see if Willie Calhoun actually belongs on this team, and if not, to open up the DH slot so that we can get some more of these left-handed outfielders into our lineup. But Shin-Soo Chu just doesn't have a place in the Rangers moving forward, and you know, even if Texas receives no significant value in return for him, I think not having him cluttering up the lineup is going to be a potential value for Texas. So that's my not-so-fun one, because I do kind of doubt Texas's ability to move on from Mr. Chu. But I have a name that I think is interesting for Rangers fans to follow this offseason. He's a guy I really, really hope Texas is in on. I think he could be a really interesting player. He's a free agent, and he is coming over from Japan. He has pitched the last several seasons with the Cebu Lions. He's been with them since 2011. He is a pitcher, left-handed, Yusei Kikuchi. He's 27. He'll turn 28 in the middle of next season in June. Lefty pitcher, posted some really, really eye-opening numbers. He has, you know, two seasons with a sub-2 ERA in Japan, two seasons with a sub-3, and then last year he was just up over a 3. There's some durability concerns, some injury concerns, but he is one of the best pitchers to come out of Japan in recent memory and will be posted this offseason. Texas has done well in the past in picking up Japanese pitchers, and I hope is a guy that Texas is looking at and that there are not a ton of viable free agent pitchers. His injury concerns are probably going to turn the big, you know, got to add a fifth starter to my rotation players off of him. He's a guy that that I think a team like Texas is hoping to dream big on and strike gold. If it doesn't work out, okay. And if it does work out, that's how you jumpstart a franchise again. So Yusei Kikuchi, he's somebody I am super, super excited in coming over to the majors next year. Hopefully it's in a Texas uniform. If not, I'll watch him somewhere else. Unless it's Los Angeles again, in which case I will set myself on fire.
Well, what's good is that we do know that at least we are going to try. Like if he's worth the addition, then we're going to try because of how well connected we are over there in the Pacific Rim.
Yep. I know teams that were interested in him included the Royals, which, oh, come on now. The Padres, that makes a lot of sense. The Dodgers, if he lands at the Dodgers, I will also set myself on fire. Either Los Angeles team, I will be pissed about. The Philadelphia Phillies were listed as a team that's been in on him. But then the Brewers, Giants, Red Sox, and Rangers are your other four. So those are the eight teams that are supposed to be the most interested in him right now. He looks a little bit like a Pat Corbin fastball slider type. Pat Corbin's also a guy I'm very interested in. He may command more money than Texas is willing to put out, but Kikuchi is sort of a similar situation that there are potentially injury-prone lefties who are fastball slider, which has a reputation for being itself a fairly injurious pitching selection. So he's a guy. I think he's going to be fun, and I'd love to find another Japanese pitcher to root for because it's left a big void in my heart. And I want another one.
Let's just hope that he isn't obsessed with Disneyland.
Yeah, seriously, if he lands with either Los Angeles team, I will be so, so incredibly disappointed. And if our consolation prize has to be Hyunjin Ryu somehow, I'll take that too. That's fine. His first playoff start was really impressive, but also I like him. So, there you go.
There you go.
That's very nice.
You said our rules were you can't dream and wish for get some pitching up in here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it anyway.
That's a specific one because the bad one would be, well, we need to go and get some starting pitching. That's my goal. Mm-hmm. No, a cool goal is to let's get this guy from Japan. That's a cool goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the Rangers would run out a starting rotation of left-handed Mike Minor, left-handed Jeff Springs, left-handed Yohander Mendez, left-handed Yusei Kikuchi, and...
and...
Ariel Jurado?
Left-handed Patrick Corbin.
Five lefties. All lefties start. That'd be a brilliant move.
What's up? We're going to do it.
To have all lefties, yeah.
Well, it's because if you look at it, the Rangers have been bad hitting against left-handed pitchers, and that's probably not because Texas fields in an entirely left-handed lineup. It clearly shows that lefties are good. So Texas should just sign five lefties and be like, cheat code, unlocked.
Cheat code.
No, their strategy is just like, to round up all the left-handed pitchers in Major League Baseball so that they don't have to play against them.
Yeah, we don't have to see them. Yeah, I know. That's actually legitimately great. We're going to do that.
Well, I was going to say is that like kind of like on that same train of thought is that we're going to go ahead and trade for Chris Davis so that way we can have a Chris Davis of our own and be like, nice, cheat code. And then you realize, oh, wait, he's owed $10 million, $5 zillion.
It's like $23 million a year for the next four seasons, I think.
Yeah, we went over this the last episode. It's just, we should do that every episode, just like, just remember Chris Davis, man.
No. That's not very fair. I just don't think that's very fun, especially given that what we can instead do is do what I'm doing right now, which is pull up Albert Pujols' Baseball Reference page.
And be like, I do that.
Oh, yeah. We're not owing Albert Pujols $30 million in 2021.
Yep. That is unreal. I do the same thing
that someone's doing.
When he'll be 52.
Gosh. That'll be fun. Yeah. If we do actually ever find out how old Pujols actually is, that'll be really fun. Maybe once he retires. Maybe not. Yeah. Probably not.
Maybe he doesn't even know.
Because they're gonna pay him. He has a 10-year, $10 million personal services contract.
Yep.
That kicks in right after that. So.
Yep. super sweet for him. Woo-hoo. Well, you know what? You have the how many years did he spend in St. Louis? Like 12. You have the run that he had in St. Louis. Like, you deserve $30 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
That's fine. Like, he's,
as long as I'm not paying it.
Right. So, and as long as he's not actually good for our opponent. So that's good too. It's like, you know, it'd be really bad if the Angels had acquired prime Albert Pujols, which is what they're paying for. So it's kind of the best of both worlds on our end. They're paying for him and they're not getting him. So that's good. But I guess that's about the season, huh? The whole year wrapped up just like that. 6 months and an hour.
Did it.
We did it.
Awesome.
Well, in review, I want to say also on behalf of the Rangers Rundown. So I just looked it up. We surpassed over 11,000 streams on our downloads of these episodes, which is pretty cool because we have no reach and no kind of social presence at all. So,
I have no friends.
So. Right. None of us have any friends, and also we don't really market ourselves super well. So, for us to get that many listens means that people are sharing it with the people that they think would like it, and it's going that way. So that's pretty cool. Really appreciate you guys listening this year, especially in a year that, you know, wasn't super exciting. It was pretty typical to lose to like the Mariners 6-2 every night. I feel like that's what we did for 162 games.
Mostly garbage.
Yeah, so
it was really, really not good.
So also shout out to the 120 downloads from Lebanon, the 45 in China. There's a lot of other foreign countries on this list too.
How funny.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're just using proxy servers or if they're actually from China, but you know, hey, that's cool. Go Rangers. And that's all we got. We'll talk about Beltre coming back and how we're going to fit Beltre and Chu into the same lineup or what the plans are with that. And Calhoun. And we'll talk about the new manager. Hopefully, I mean, probably within the next 10 days or so, right? Ish? Something like that.
Something like that. He said he was going to go on vacation and then he was going to take about 10 days to consider it. So I think we'll know something definitely by the end of October.
Yeah.
Rangers manager 2019, Barry Bonds. That'll be fun.
Oh, that would be awesome.
It would actually be kind of rad. Everyone would hate him so much.
Yeah, but
it's gonna be A-Rod. I'm gonna bring A-Rod back.
Oof,
that would be cool too. I love TV A-Rod. like post career A-Rod has been really, really great. You have to give him that.
It's gonna be Pete Rose, and he's gonna put himself in the lineup like every Sunday.
And bet heavily on the team.
Like from the hospital bed, he's just like gurney himself out there.
We're first going to go scorched earth. Let's get OJ.
Oh my gosh. Bench coach. Yeah. Or OJ. OJ.
I was going to make a hitting coach joke, but I got disgusted with myself and then made it anyway.
Oh, there we go. All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
Man, on that note, we ended 3 minutes ago.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.